You are listening to CFBU 103.7 FM. We're joined in the studio with Celeste Smith, Wolf Clan, a member of the Oneida Grand River Territory, and one of the lead organizers at the Supporters of Haudenosaunee Right to Hunt. Thank you so much for joining us, Celeste.
No, Nyawe, for having me.
Now, we're here to talk about year number 5 of the deer hunt up at Short Hills Provincial Park. We've got a lot of ground to cover, lots of issues that come up each year. Can we start by talking about how last weekend's hunt went? We're moving into weekend number 2 of the hunt, and there are 3 weekends. How did last weekend go generally?
Well, I actually wasn't there because it was my son's wedding, which is really exciting. But I do have some reports from the front, as we say. It's very similar to years past. However, we have decided that there is a big issue with the blockade going on, and we have started a petition.
The blockade is something that comes up every year, and here we are still 5 years later, and there it is. So people, I think, really don't understand what that blockade really is, first of all.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting a lot of questions on what is the blockade. So what the blockade is barriers that are set up by the police and manned by protesters so that they can hold up the hunters or the harvesters' trucks anywhere from 1 minute to 20 minutes.
The question that most people have on their minds is, why are the police allowing this? Because you have a right to hunt there. You've been given the okay by the ministry and various other parties. What's the rationale behind all that?
Well, we're going to ask them next week. And we put a petition up online, just getting people to know what exactly is happening at this barricade. We have absolutely no problem with protesting. Absolutely. We do it all the time for Indigenous issues all over Canada, right? So we have no problem with that. What we have a problem with is that there is a blockade happening with our hunters so that they can be stopped. They can have their license plates taken down by private individuals. They can be counted. They look in the trucks, sometimes touch the trucks, and often put flashlights in the eyes of our hunters and of the children that are in the cars as well.
Now, let's go back to the beginning. For people, let's say this is the first time they're tuning in and hearing about this entire issue. You have a right to be there as part of your treaty rights to hunt there and many other places within Canada. Maybe you should explain who the parties are that have said, go ahead, do this.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Well, the Haudenosaunee Wildlife and Habitat Authority decided a few years ago that we need to expand our hunting areas. And, well, we do have treaty rights to this entire area. So we need to use them. We need to start pressing our treaties. And so talks were made, and they looked around at a bunch of sites. It's important to know that Crown land is to be used for purposes for Indigenous people as well. A lot of people don't understand that. They think, well, Crown land is public land. But actually, in our histories and our treaties, Crown land is supposed to be meant for things like hunting and fishing for Indigenous people as well. So that's important to note.
So they started looking at Short Hills as a place to do this. And because of the fact that it is a provincial park, you have all these players involved, like the Ministry of Natural Resources. Can you go through those people that are there usually on site?
Well, it's the most basically secure hunt in all of Ontario. There's ministry people there, there's police, but the police and the OPP were brought in because of the protester presence. There is no OPP presence at any other harvest site in Ontario. So that's why the police are here, and that's why the costs are so high.
And why do you think it's here? Why are the protesters here and not at all the other places that you've been hunting?
Well, there is kind of a mixed bag of people who come down. The main backbone are landowners who live around the park. There are also some anti-hunt advocates and some vegan advocates. But we've been doing a lot of work with some anti-hunt and the vegan advocates. We've actually been getting some headway, and we've been doing some great work in talking about why we do what we do and why our cultural rights are so important.
Now, talking about the landowners around the park, you mentioned earlier that there are deer being hunted not just in Short Hills, but around. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So deer are hunted on private land all around the park. So it's interesting to us that our 6-day hunt, where we take approximately just over 30 deer in the entire hunt, is being targeted because there's hunting all over the private land, and it's totally legal. And this hunt is legal, too. So we're just astonished that there's so much protest here, because what we're doing is right on so many levels.
And you mentioned that the deer that live around the park, let's say, part of the reason that they're being hunted in some cases is because of damage that they're doing to property. Can you explain a little bit?
Absolutely. Well, before the HWHA even talked about doing a hunt, of course, they're going to come in and they're going to do some evaluation, right? Because it's a habitat authority. So what they do is, using indigenous knowledge, they go in and they look at what does the park look like? Are the deer altering the environments at all? What kind of small plants are there? And they are actually highly altering the Short Hills Park. They're actually widening the creek beds. And you can see, because you can have large swaths of land in between the creek, and you can see where along the sides of the creek beds, it's almost like erosion is happening. It's not actually erosion. What that is, it's from deer. And when there's so many deer, they cut the creek bed. So there's a lot of damage happening in there. And it would just be really nice to have an acknowledgement that indigenous knowledge is being used here, and that it should be recognized and for that. So
you mentioned that in the very beginning that there was this assessment done by the Haudenosaunee, and now we need
environmental assessment. We need all of this, you know, money spent on this. And really, we've already done that. What we need is the recognition of our traditional knowledges and our traditional people to be recognized, because it's just as valuable.
One of the things that comes up, I spoke to Liz White, and she was basically saying that there is a need for the ministry to do an environmental assessment. She talks about the fact that when the hunt is happening, there's ATVs going in there and there's tire tracks and there's all that stuff, which does look like destruction to the land. So how do you explain that to people, that for the number of days there is some destruction happening to the actual land, never mind the deer? How do you explain that?
Well, for us, I mean, Mother Earth is alive and she's going to repair herself. There's actually a lot of damage, I find, because I use the park too. Let's not forget that us indigenous people, it's not just the landowners living around it or other settlers that are using this park. We are too. I'm in there all the time. My best friend lives around the corner. I mean, so I'm in there all the time. And there's actually a lot of damage from human use, right? So there's a lot more going on to this park than I think maybe is known. So a lot of human use. And again, the deer, we can't forget them, what they're doing. And so I think that, you know, a couple of days with some ATVs, I mean, Mother Earth is just we're going to be fine.
People refer to what you're doing as a cult, but yet you say only 30 deer have been taken out. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's one of the buzzwords right now is cull. And it's absolutely not a cull. A cull is when you go into the deer population and you take out a half of the population. I mean, just over 30 deer is hardly a cull. There are hundreds. So in fact, the first estimates just before the harvest was started was about 500 deer in that area. So, I mean, there's a reason why the vineyards and the different private properties call in hunters to harvest the deer, because there are so many. In fact, when we first came to the site and talked to neighbors, which we did, they were so glad we were there, because one of the neighbors actually the year before had all the ivy off of his house entirely eaten by the deer.
One of the other issues that comes up is safety. This is a big deal with the people who are not in support of the hunt. They talk about safety within the park when the hunt is happening, safety around the park, arrows leaving the park, deer that are wounded, you know, leaving the park. What's your take on all of that?
Well, it's really important to note that it's impossible to tell if a deer is found, if that's what's happened to it, if it's one of our harvesters, or if it was someone who's been hired, if it was a poacher, or if it died of natural causes. So you can take all the pictures you want, but there's no way to tell when and how that deer has expired. And it's also really important to say that this is the safest harvest anywhere in Ontario. There are more officers there. They are watched constantly in and out. And this is not something where someone's going to be going, you know, hog wild and you are watched all the time. There are officers with you on the hunt. So, so it's really important to know that it's extremely safe. And in fact, it's so safe that the scouts camp next door is totally fine with this happening. They actually have an agreement with the HWHA and they have no problem with it.
Now, one of the comments that came up was about the killing of deer that were lactating. Can you talk about that?
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting because this is rut season.
And what's rut season for people who don't know?
Well, they're mating. So, I mean, you're going to have the small deer on their own at this point. You're not going to have them attached to the mother at this point because she's off doing her thing.
I had spoken to a number of hunters a couple of years ago, and one of them told the story of he took his son on the hunt, and basically you've got this child in the back of a vehicle surrounded by protesters that are either banging or making noise or whatever, and it can be pretty traumatizing for a child who's trying to learn their traditional ways. So let's talk about the role of children and the children at the hunt and kind of their experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really offensive to me, actually, when I hear the words that children shouldn't be involved in something like this, because you totally miss the point of our cultural practices if you say something like that. Children should and will always be a part of this. One of the things we do in our community is the uncles will take their nephews out for the day or for the week and they will hunt with them. And that bonding time, the learning of the ceremonies, the giving of the tobacco, and everything from they're learning patience to learning how to do, you know, just basic things with their uncles. So that is a basis of our kinship. So we have kinship laws and we have, of ways of being. And that's one of the most basic ones. So if you're telling me not to bring our children, I'm telling you that's, it's part of our culture and it's always going to happen. So maybe there needs to be some decorum on the other side and some respect for that.
That leads into the next issue, the whole idea of racism and colonialism. And there's been a lot of talk about the racism angle this year. Can you tell us more about that?
Mm-hmm. What's really interesting with the race issue is that, is what I've noticed, is that all mention of race has been scrubbed from any petition or any online site or anything talking about Short Hills from the other side. You cannot erase me. You can't erase me from this situation because it is Indigenous hunters. This is what it's about. We went to the MNR and we told them that we're pressing our treaty rights and we're going to hunt here. We work together. And so this is a really good thing of working together. You cannot take my race out of the situation and have people signing petitions with misinformation on it. If you're not going to put the fact that it's an Indigenous harvest on the petition, someone signing something that is just, well, we don't like hunting or it's a cull, you know, those things are bad. But this is an Indigenous hunt led by Indigenous people for Indigenous people. So the fact that there's no mention of the word Indigenous anywhere is really startling and it's really upsetting, actually.
From their perspective, they're probably thinking, well, we can't mention Indigenous because that would be racist. So we're going to just leave that off the petition. But in fact, you are saying that if it was framed differently and said an Indigenous hunt of Indigenous hunters exercising their treaty rights, that you'd be fine with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the misinformation that's upsetting. Don't take my race out of it, because in erasing me, you have to know that that's racist, right? That's a definition of it. You're belittling me. You're not, you know, giving me my due, right? In this. So what would make sense is yes, to still have the petition, because of course we support all forms of protest and those types of things, but put the facts in there so that someone can actually answer and write on the petition and know, because we actually talk to people at the hunt every year who come down here and say from Toronto or some other places and say, wow, I had no idea it was an Indigenous hunt. This feels very, very weird to me to be on the other side of a protest. I stood with you at Standing Rock. I don't know what I'm feeling, and I need to think more about this.
I noticed last year that there was perhaps, and maybe I was misreading this, a different approach on the side of the hunters and their supporters about how to approach this prior to the hunt. In other words, encouraging more dialogue, encouraging public education. There was workshops, I think, at the library. There was someone doing some talks there. Was that an effort to kind of just educate and increase awareness about things in general?
Absolutely. You see, with us, everything is a learning experience, and we encountered so many people that didn't understand what was a treaty right. What are my responsibilities as a settler in this? So we had a lot of this kind of talking and dialogue with people. And we thought, you know what? The general public needs to know what's happening, and they want to learn, and there's this hunger. So we started to do reconciliation activities, and we have them still going on this year as well. And they're being very well attended. We actually did the blanket exercise on Sunday. It was hugely well attended. And, you know, people really left having a really good sense of the land because, I mean, you're doing a blanket exercise, which is acknowledging, you know, the past wrongs that have happened to Indigenous people and the land that's been taken away on a land that is being protested on, you know, for us having our treaty rights. So it's a lot to think about.
A few years ago, people were going on about the treaty rights, basically questioning the validity of the treaty rights. And somebody said, oh, no, that one doesn't count because this one superseded it. And there were these ongoing kind of dialogues. And I haven't noticed that at all this year. It seems like that's a non-issue. It's kind of dealt with. Or am I misreading kind of how that situation is?
Well, there's still, you know, one or two that have been saying it all along, you know, who think that they know our treaties better than we do, which is an interesting notion. However, we have done a lot more education and talking about them because there just isn't one treaty for this area. So you can talk about, well, Nanfan this, Nanfan that. Well, that was not the only treaty in this area, right? There's the Treaty of Niagara and, more importantly, the Dish with One Spoon Treaty. So these are all valid treaties. And so it's really heartening to know that people are really learning up and knowing more about these things. So.
You are out there every year for year number five. And so you've got the people who are anti-hunting, and they're probably not going to go away anytime soon. And then there are the hunters just trying to do their hunt. And then there are all the other people in the middle, the police and the ministry and all of those people just trying to placate people and make sure there's no violence and all of that going on. What's the answer to this? What do you want to see happen?
Actually, it's really simple. We try, and every year we have a peace food table with vegan and non-vegan food, and we're trying to learn. We're trying to do Indigenous ways of having food together. But I mean, ultimately, everyone has their right to protest, and we're not saying that that's, you know, that's something that should go away. What we're saying is that the blockade needs to stop and the stalling of the vehicles needs to stop. The protesters can go across the road. And they can have their signs and whatnot, but not hovering around the cars, not being around the cars. And they can have their charter rights over across the road, and we can have our Indigenous treaty rights in the park, and that's fine. So that's all we want.
Now, you mentioned you've got a petition going on for mm-hmm. that very thing. How can people find the petition or get to sign it?
Well, we have several online ways to find this. So we've got SixNationsRightToHunt.ca, and so it's on there, the petition. And also you can find us on Facebook at Short Hills Solidarity. So yeah, you can, and in there, there's more detailed things about what happens at the barricade and those types of things. And we also have some things coming up, actually. We have, we're going to be screening a movie, and it's called Sweet Blood. And it's by Shirley Chichu, who is our chancellor at Brock University. And so she's done this amazing film about diabetes and how it's important to have Indigenous traditional dishes and that sort of thing. So we're going to be screening that, and that's going to be at Brock. And that is at, I think that's at 6 o'clock, possibly. But everything is on our Facebook. But hopefully we'll see you out Monday, and there's going to be delicious food and a fantastic, again, more knowledge for people to know. I mean, why do we need to hunt? Well, one of the issues would be the ugly rate of diabetes that we have in our culture because of too much sugar.
And the hunt itself, what time does it start? What days?
The 25th and 26th, and we ask people to be out around 2 o'clock to about 6, and we've got the Niagara Anti-Racism Coalition coming out and doing a nice presentation for us. And then we have something on Sunday as well, and then the 4th and the 5th would be a Monday and a Tuesday, and the same, 2 to 6.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming by and trying to enlighten us on a lot of this information. There's a lot there to discuss. I would like to thank Celeste Smith for joining us. Celeste, member of the Wolf Clan, Oneida Grand River Territory, director of Three Fires Community Justice in St. Catharines, and one of the lead organizers at the supporters of the Haudenosaunee Right to Hunt. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah.